Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. There's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. And I am pleased to introduce you guys to a new episode of Real Blend, a bonus episode coming at you for Thanksgiving weekend. This is a brand new interview that we did with Giovanni Ribisi, who we are huge fans of in general as an actor, but we're also bringing attention to his work as a cinematographer in a movie that we have been raving about since we got a chance to see it earlier this year called Strange Darling. I love this opportunity to be able to get people to come back around, especially after more people have hopefully had a chance to see Strange Darling. If you haven't yet, director J.T. Molnar has created this incredible twisted and twisty serial killer thriller that legitimately, if you are watching this week's episode of Real Blend and haven't yet seen this film, you need to, A, don't read anything about it, don't listen to anything about it, just go watch it. It's called Strange Darling. It's incredible. Hopefully you press play on this because you've already seen Strange Darling and you want to learn a ton more about the production, getting into the intricacies of making the film, but then also just sitting down with Giovanni Ribisi, talking about his career, what led him to become a cinematographer on this film. Maybe you were watching this and didn't even know that Giovanni Ribisi, the famous actor from Gone in 60 Seconds and Saving Private Ryan and a slew of other films and television shows, served as cinematographer on this show and seems to be going down that direction in the back half of his career. So, like I said, really happy to have Giovanni Ribisi come back around to promote a film like Strange Darling. As we get into the end of the year, we start to talk about our top 10 movies of the year. I'm sure that this one's going to pop up. This is part of the reason why it's going to show up. You're going to learn a lot more about the putting together of this film and how it kind of was a little bit of a miracle that they pulled off what they pulled off. So without further ado, this is Giovanni Ribisi joining the Real Blend podcast for a special Thanksgiving week bonus episode of Real Blend. Blown away by your movie, obviously, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Let me be one of the latest people to tell you how incredible it is. And it's absolutely going to make my top 10 of the year, which is amazing.
Thank you, Sean.
Appreciate this time. We're a filmmaking podcast. We like getting into the nuts and bolts of it. We're not quite Shot Deck, which I just enjoyed listening to this morning.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
That was incredible. What a deep dive. We've had Larry Scherer on. He came on for Joker.
He's a legend. It was such a privilege to talk to him.
I had no idea that tool even existed. I was blown away by sipping through the shots.
No, I was using that on Strange Darling. Yeah. I mean, it's such a great way to communicate with the rest of the crew and director and just illustrates everything. It reminds me actually of I'm already like dropping names. But when we were doing Saving Private Ryan 3 decades ago, I remember Steven Spielberg would be by the monitor and he would have a massive storyboard chart and sort of just like going through each panel or whatever and marking it off and just sort of executing the day like that. But it was there for everybody to see.
Right.
And it was just invaluable for us. Yeah, I mean, even as actors.
Listen, you went to Saving Private Ryan. What did you learn from Janusz?
As if we went to war. Yeah.
I'm saying you no, took the conversation true. In that direction. So I got to go to Janusz. What have you picked up from him over the years that you still apply right now?
Oh my! Well, one of the things that was remarkable was how incredibly shot the movie. I mean, the movie was beautiful, and it was, breaking new bounds with the faster shutter. Just the way that their process was, the dynamic between him and Steven, for me, what I was blown away by was the fact that, that was the third movie that Steven Spielberg had made within a 12-month period, I believe. Wow. There was a Jurassic Park and then Amistad before that.
Right.
And he had just turned 50 or 51 years old. And he was just on fire. And so was Janusz. They still are. At one point, there's a whole opening battle sequence with Saving Private Ryan that's 27 and a half minutes long or something like that. In the script, it read 7.5 pages. Mm. But at one point, we were 2 weeks ahead of schedule on that sequence, which is mind-blowing in the context of everybody else being 2 months behind schedule.
Sure.
Right. Because he just came prepared, and he's such a virtuoso. I think it was Martin Scorsese that said that he's one of the few people that can walk on a set and see a scene for the first time and sort of know exactly what to do.
Feel yourself getting a little bit closer in that? And the more you do it, are you starting to feel that way as well too? When you step onto a set, do you start to think where your lighting is going to be? Do you start to think where your camera is going to be?
It just really comes with experience. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm there. I would definitely, though, it doesn't hurt to aspire to such things.
Sure.
I think that, it's just really about, the best thing to do is just go out and shoot. As difficult as it is, to do so with, all the regulations that people have to put up with and the miracle of making a movie, you just have to find a way to get, it really is about hours under your belt. Hmm. And study with people that you respect and search them out and be willing, coming up even just as an actor, it was just anything I could to get on a film set,
So you and I are about the same age. We came up on the same types of films, and I know a lot of directors were cutting their teeth on music videos and commercials. Sure. Fincher and Bay and guys like that. I know you did some of that. Is that still a proving ground nowadays for up and comers?
Nowadays, I don't know. I'm hearing more and more that that's dying, but then you see people emerge with some of the most incredible, beautiful films, even if it's just like a short film. Or whatever it is, if it's something that's meant for an experimental thing, there's nothing to stop you from grabbing a camera and doing that and working at that daily, hourly, and just making yourself obsessed with it. I shot music videos and directed some, and was working and shooting and directing commercials as well. And it really is a great forum for anybody to just, even just developing soft skills of like dealing with a crew and organizing and pointing them in a specific direction without a mutiny.
Encountering obstacles, right? Like weather delays and things like that.
Oh yeah. And being smart about that. That to me is 75% of making a movie. If you're directing, this is almost a direct quote from Elie Kazan, who said 75% of directing is attitude and the rest is talent. Right. And it's really because you're going to be hit with things that make you that you wonder if it's even worth it at a certain point. And it is, and you know, you just have to have that sort of that muscle, I guess.
Let's come back around to Strange Darling. Obviously, it's what we're here to talk about today. It's so incredibly delightful to have a title that, you know, isn't circled on the calendar, isn't anticipated, you know, that just comes up and yeah. everybody sees it and word of mouth pushes it, you know, like you have to go sure. see this movie. What oh, wow. is your reaction to the response to the film?
It's a sort of a long journey getting there. Even recently, we were sort of trying to not divulge too much of the process of what it was to make this movie, but at a certain point, I think it's okay and everybody's forgiven and you know, it is what it is. But I've really truly never seen anything like this with J.T. Mulner, the writer director, and what he went through and what he persevered through. You know, I think that it's that the who was Chekhov said that the writer has one concept and the actors have the complete opposite concept, and together they make theater. And this was sort of the case with the producers and JT and myself. You know, they had an idea and it took them a minute to adjust, but through that adjustment, you know, there was a lot of tourists, as the Greeks say. They shut us down twice, because they weren't happy with dailies, specifically certain aspects of it. And JT was trying to convince, you know, we started the movie, for instance, this is a horror thriller film, and we started the movie, the production schedule on the breakfast scene with the doomsdayers.
Okay.
With Barbara Hershey and Ed Begley. And, you know, they were going, well, this is a half day of shooting eggs and things getting, but what is going on here? And for JT and myself, we had prepared and we had worked and built the movie over the course of 5 months on paper. So we kind of knew exactly what it was, but it was definitely something that JT will even say was a learning experience. Like you start with all the action stuff to go like, no, we definitely, we're not going to be making something that, you know, is just eggs being fried up. So the, you know, there was just a lot of that. And then to the credit of Miramax and the people who were there, who are actually no longer there, but the people who were there, after the first test screening of the director's cut, the next day they looked at the scores and the audience reaction, and they gave JT they gave him final cut, which is right. extraordinary.
So yeah, it really how rare is that? Can you talk to that?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a rare thing. Surprisingly so. I remember, I think this was 20 years ago, hearing something to the effect that, you know, only James Cameron, Steven Spielberg, and Martin Scorsese had final cut. Or some, you know, period, group of people. It was really extraordinary. You know, and I guess when you do wear all the hats, including being a producer, and you understand also the impossibility of that job, and so many people don't even know what that is, but it's almost like, what isn't that job? It's literally doing everything. And it's keeping the glue and it's pushing the train through and it's delivering a movie. That's a miracle, period.
Right.
And walking a mile in everybody else's shoes, you understand. I mean, I'm sure producers have run into, filmmakers, who have turned in, you know, a blank film because they, you know, they thought, well, fuck you, don't take my art away, you know. And so, you know, again, it is a communal art form. I do believe in giving a vision and a film over to somebody that once in a relationship has been established, mm-hmm. and and trust has been established, you have to have a final say. And I think that final say always goes to with the director, mm-hmm. You know, all the way through final cut. But again, I think it helps to understand everybody's position.
Well, over the course of your career, you've not shied away from doing blockbusters, just entertainment blockbusters. You know, there's that balance between art and commerce. And I think, you know, the best filmmakers find a way to sort of split it right down the middle and deliver on both sides.
Oh, I've done things that were just embarrassing. I mean, you know, but that was also sort of reaching and almost, you know, just a fuck you to the literati, you know, like just like, you know, in a way to try to find something that is normally looked down on or tasteless and to try to make it interesting or tasteful. And also working with people that I like to work with. You know, I mean, yeah, I never really looked at it like, you know, studio versus independent or commerce versus art. It really is one of the few. I mean, there's so much money at stake that it really just comes down to the writing and the people that the pedigree really of the people that who are involved in making a production. This is something that I think that is important to talk about and to touch on, which is as boring as it is, and as much as, you know, artists and creative people don't want to get into finances or economics, or they might, you know, from my generation, I'm sure you heard this in the 90s at least, that, you know, they don't like to think about money. It's sure. a thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, at a certain point, it's time to put on the grown-up pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And start having conversations where representatives and including unions and, you know, everybody, where you need to be able to have those conversations yourself and start talking and speaking for yourself, because there is so much commerce at stake.
Sure. Yeah.
And you need to understand, I think it's important for people to understand, again, how impossible it is to make a movie and who it is sort of, you know, benefiting from certain things where, you know, I mean, we have, I think, zero productions going on in Los Angeles right now, or feels like that. We have whole studio lots empty. We have, I mean, it's, and because I think that's because it's just too expensive.
Right.
To make a film, when you're talking about, you know, there was a production that a friend of mine was telling me about that he's producing in New York with seven people in a bar, and it's $7 million. And the movie got put into turnaround, which means it's, you know, basically being shelved because it's costing $7 million for seven people to have a conversation or basically do a play inside a bar. I mean, this is insane.
Right. Yeah.
This is insane. So yeah, I tend to go on and I go off.
You're on the right show. Believe me, this is the type of thing that people who listen to this show want to hear about.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. What are your goals for the upcoming holiday season? Whether it's traveling internationally or connecting with family and friends, a new language can open doors to meaningful conversations and cultural appreciation. I myself have family that live outside the country, and learning a new language has helped me communicate and grow closer with them over the years. That's where Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program, can help you take those goals to the next level. Rosetta Stone has been trusted for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's designed for long-term retention with no English translations, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language, and it's available on desktop and mobile, so you can continue to learn whenever and wherever is best for you. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Real Blend listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off when you visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Gear Patrol just called their ISO certified dive watch the best sub $500 dive watch. Full stop. And their ceramic watch material almost magical. The Wall Street Journal called them iconoclastic cool, potentially redefining the industry itself. Who are we talking about? It's Movement, and they're leveling up your gift giving with the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics, Movement's got options for everyone on your list. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, be the good gifter this year with Movement's huge site-wide holiday sales and enjoy the usual fast and free shipping. Shop 30 to 60% off now at Movement.com. That's MVMT.com.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at
I want to get back to the movie. I want to get into specifically, if we could. And by this point, if anyone is listening to this point in the conversation, you have seen this movie. So we can talk at length about it. Finances. Come on, guys. We're digging into it. I want to talk about the final shot in the movie. And I want to talk about the conversations that you had with JT and Willa. Specifically about how long you were going to hold that final shot.
We knew that we were going to do that. It was a conversation right here in this room, actually, where we talked about that, and we just fell in love with the idea of seeing somebody in real time die. Mm-hmm. And this was an example of one of the contentious points between the studio and the director. And we, you know, we really fought for it. We had to shoot that twice. I think this was this, you know, independent filmmaking. At the second time we shot it, which is the take that's in the movie, the special effects makeup one person got mad because JT gave them a note on something else that we were shooting later. And they stormed off, and it was almost like made a scene on set. So we didn't have a special effects makeup person. The special effects department head who does, like, you know, explosions and squibs and things like that,
right,
said, "Hey, I have some fake blood." And so and he pulls out this big, huge tank, and he put it in the back of the truck and put hoses, and he turned it on. And suddenly, Willa, right before the take, was drowning in fake. It was just like there was something wrong with the tank or the pump or whatever, and it was just going. So through all of that, she still, you know, pulled off a performance like that, which was, you know, maybe that's divulging too much, because I don't want to take away from the movie, but you know, that was just a funny anecdote of, you know, and also just shows how talented this person is, that no matter what, her focus was right there. There's this moment where I had a hostess tray, the key grip was standing behind me, we're rolling, I'm supposed to tilt down and then tilt up, and then the key grip comes in and locks the camera off, and we jump in the follow vehicle and watched it. And it was just, I think it was at the end of the movie. It was like one of those moments where I was like, and just got completely lost in her performance.
Wait, that's not a stage? I assumed you shot it on a stage.
The last shot? No. That's an actual
moving car?
Moving car. Yeah.
Oh, get out of here. Yeah.
And I don't even know. I mean, I think, you know, we had the stunt coordinator driving it. So it wasn't the woman, but it was this guy wearing her clothes. Mm-hmm. And he actually took her pistol out of her hand. And then, the big thing was just like, don't get too close to oncoming traffic. Otherwise, the camera will get swiped off.
Unbelievable. I assumed you were on a stage. That's crazy. Yeah. That's really great.
Oh yeah.
And just if you could, as an actor observing this work as a cinematographer, can you just speak about Willa's performance and the range that she has?
Her and Kyle, everybody in the movie. Just extraordinary. You know, again, this was an experience that I've never had in 40 years of making movies. And watching what JT was going through. And you have to be aware of what's going on if you're that close and that intimate with everybody working every day as they were. but they kept faith and they kept their belief and they showed up and they were professional. And it really paid off. This movie lives and dies on the performances, as I think a lot of movies do. And that's all I can say. I think they deserve all the praise. They deserve all the praise they're getting. It's just extraordinary.
So we have this conversation on the show a lot. We have a co-host of mine, Kevin McCarthy, who is an ardent defender of film.
Yeah.
And it cracks me up. What's that?
Celluloid or
yes. Celluloid. Right. And it cracks me up. I was watching interviews and I see you on the Today Show talking about 35 millimeter film.
Oh, yeah.
I go for good for you, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, cool.
But then at the same time, you said something which I think was extremely relevant, where you said it doesn't really matter the tool that you use. It's all the other elements that are kind of in front of it, because you've worked with, you know, Ava DuVernay, Michael Mann, all these other people who work in digital.
Sure. When it comes to film.
That's what I wanted to get your take on.
Honestly, there are beautiful. One of my favorite movies is a digital. I mean, photographically is a digital movie. It's just something.
Which one, if you don't mind me asking?
The Revenant, which I've been watching a lot of. Which is, I mean, it's just go back to it because it's just so extraordinary. I can't believe how beautiful that movie is.
Chivo.
Yeah, but he's shooting film right now. He's going back. Yeah.
Okay.
There's just something about film for me that, you know, even in the context of saying it's impossible to make a movie, it's a miracle to make a movie, that it just makes it that much more difficult. No, it's not. It's just the process of it. You know what I mean? For over 100 years, we had a certain rhythm, I guess. And I'm talking about, you know, okay, so roll sound, you know, everybody pays attention and there's a certain sort of regard for that. And when the camera's rolling, you're spending money and you're being quiet. You know, this is aside from what I believe is a superior image. And, you know, even watching a movie like The Brutalist, which I saw last night projected on 70 millimeter, it was just, there was a moment where I was watching it. It's just such an extraordinary masterpiece. But I just, there was just a sense of sort of like literally like a physical sensation, or it's just easier on the eyes or something. I don't know what it is of watching a projected movie and that sort of analog wavelength. I don't know how to describe it. I just know that it's there for me.
Right. Yeah.
It's just, you know, better for actors, you know, better. I just all, you know, so all of the above. I couldn't really imagine shooting I shouldn't say that. I mean, definitely at a certain point, you know, obviously depend. But I really try to focus on film and celluloid.
I want to tell you a quick story, if I could. We just had Alfonso Cuarón on the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cool.
And he's working on Disclaimer, the Apple TV show. And have you had a chance to see that show?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay,
so he's telling us about shooting this the scene in the ocean where the boy has to go out and save the kid.
Oh my God.
In the boat. And he says you can't have a 7-year-old in a dinghy, right? Like you can't risk them out in the water. So they had to shoot that in a tank. And they had to find an outdoor tank in order to be able to shoot the bit. But by this point, they'd shot all the Italy scenes on the beach. Mm-hmm. And so Chivo had to match the light.
Sure.
And in order to find an outdoor tank for them to match the light, they had to actually go from Italy to South Africa because of the change of the temperature and the weather, and they had to go from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere.
Sure.
Just to match the light.
Wow. Oh, that's really interesting. To match the light and the weather and all that stuff. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's amazing. And the attention to that kind of detail is, I think, why, you know, they are what they are. I was just, because I don't know how much I should say, but I was actually conferring with them a little bit with, specifically Chivo on that. And, you know, he preps 5 months of shooting and testing and all of that beforehand, and, you know, works on the lenses and the customization of lenses. And it's just like the amount of I mean, it's just incredible. You know, people take it for granted. It's an interesting thing. Because I have a little studio, and this was actually the place that, I mean, my company was basically the physical infrastructure for Strange Darling. And over the years, a lot of people have come to me and said, you know, I want to make this movie here. And I would say, great, I love the script. Let's talk about it. Let's look at see the storyboards. And they said, oh, I don't like to work with storyboards. And I would say, oh, right, yeah. So Hitchcock and Steven Spielberg, they need to work with storyboards, but you don't as a first-time director. And you know, that's fine. Maybe that's true. I mean, apparently Truffaut never worked with storyboards. But there's a part of it that and the overall sort of thing for that, or point, is that, you know, if you really want to aspire to something like that, you first have to assume the position. Right.
Sure.
And sort of, I mean, you know, imitation is the first thing in learning how to do anything. You know, you don't need $100 million to explore that and to do those kinds of tests and to really use your imagination for how deep and how hard you can actually work on something.
Right. So this year you were part of something that it's grand and a throwback, and that's the Horizon films.
Oh, yeah.
Having one come out, having one be filmed. What was it like just looking over Costner's shoulder and having him work on a Western of that level?
Arguably the greatest screenplays I've ever read. He spent 37 years writing them. Mm-hmm. It's an American saga. It's like, you know, it's the third testament, as a, you know, or whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
I have so much respect for him and love, really, for what he's doing and what he's going through and how he's persisting. Again, that's a certain kind of person who really just will not give up until he's told that story. And all the sets are still there. And, you know, I think a lot of us are just really anticipating going back out west and working with him again.
Unbelievable. All right, I'll get you out of here on this one. I turned 50 in February. You turn 50 in a few weeks.
In a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. You too. Yeah. Well, February, yeah.
Yeah. That milestone?
In February,
you've already turned in 50. So I've been 50 for a couple months.
Okay, cool.
What does that milestone mean to you? What are you thinking about? How are you feeling?
Just straight up full blown midlife crisis. Yeah, I'm sort of I mean, it's a big deal, but then at the same time, you know, it is just a marker, and I'm very excited, actually. I guess that's all I can say about it.
Okay.
Needless to say, I'm a little like, wow. Sort of speechless, I guess. That's probably more accurate.
That's all right. That's a good place to be for sure. Well, again, congratulations on everything going on, man, but specifically Strange Darling. It's fantastic. And
thank you, man. Thank you.
It's truly amazing. And I can't wait for more people to even check it out. And we appreciate you coming on the show. I hope you come back around.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year.
hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you so much to Giovanni Ribisi for joining us here on the Real Blend podcast. I cannot say enough good things about Strange Darling. So now if you've made it to the end of the interview, I'm going to trust the fact that you guys have seen it. But just the way that J.T. Molnar strategically puts together the film in different chapters, how the chapters are told out of order, the way that the story really snaps into place, but specifically the way that they change what we expect about the story and some of the judgments that we make on the narrative and different characters in the narrative until we have all of the information, which again sort of like turns a magnifying glass back on the audience and almost says, hey, we know what you were thinking about this character or that character, and we're going to turn it on its head and make you think completely differently and almost feel a little bit bad for jumping to conclusions about certain characters. I love that. I thought it was a great way to kind of manipulate the story, manipulate the audience, and really come up with a surprising twist throughout the course of the movie. Not just like a big, he was dead the whole time twist, but like a really great, oh God, I didn't even know we were going in that direction, and here's where we are. Also love Ribisi's answer about filming the final shot. And really, really cool to find out that wasn't a stage. I'm blown away by the fact that that's an actual car stunt that they were doing in that one, because that makes the technical aspect of what was happening, and even when you consider Willa's performance in that final shot, even more impressive. And I love hearing him talk about how many times they put it together and the fun stuff with the blood machine, and them trying to figure out how to do that. So really, really great. So bonus episode here. Thank you very much for watching. We appreciate you guys checking out the channel. We will be somewhat back on Friday. We don't have a brand new show for you guys, but we are going to have a new and original interview with Peter and Bobby Farrelly on behalf of their new film, Dear Santa, which stars Jack Black. So not a full show, but a brand new interview, the Farrelly brothers coming on. And of course, because you guys know the show, we have to talk to them about Dumb and Dumber and some of our favorite scenes from that movie. But really just a good conversation in general with the Farrellys about their new film and working with Jack Black and their take on comedy and stuff like that. So you're going to want to be here for that. If you're on the YouTube channel, do me a favor, hit subscribe. Turn on your notifications. You'll be alerted as soon as new shows drop onto the Real Blend channel. We appreciate all the love we're seeing from you guys in the comments. Keep those coming as well, too. I try my best to read everything you guys post and respond to them when I can. Share the show with some film-loving friends of yours or family members, especially around Thanksgiving, as everybody's kind of figure out what to go see. If you want to hear about Wicked and Gladiator, we have reviews of those on the channel. Go back and listen to those, as well as an archive of amazing interviews that took place over the course of the year. And we're going to finish strong. We got a few really good interviews in the can already and are efforting some major ones as well, too. So keep it right here on Real Blend. We appreciate all your support. Hope you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving. If you're here in the States, hope you enjoy your weekend if you guys are based anywhere else. And we appreciate you guys supporting Real Blend. We'll talk to you real soon with a brand new episode.